The following is a production of Art Trap Productions, brought to you by the Gallifreyan Embassy and has been made possible by supporting subscribers and donations from listeners like you. This episode is brought to you by Audible. Please visit audiblepodcast.com/podchalk for your free audiobook download.
Even open this door or not?
Ah, Stutzy, have you had a good rest?
Damn you, doctor, open this door!
Sorry, it seems to be locked.
Come on, go get the cutting gear.
Now listen, doctor, be reasonable. This won't do you any good.
Stutzy, we'll be touching down in a couple of minutes, or more likely crashing down, you see. I'm a bit out of practice with manual landing, so if I were you, I'd find something firm to hang on to.
I'll murder you when I get in there, doctor.
Johnny Major, this is Doctor Who Podshock. Doctor Who Podshock.
Okay, well, let's do it.
No.
You know, whatever it is, if it's valuable, send it to us.
For the best in all things Doctor Who, it's Doctor Who Podshock, the podcast all about Doctor Who, the longest-running science fiction television program, with Louis Trapani.
Hello.
Ken Deep.
Hello.
James Norton. Hello. News.
Fabulous.
Reviews.
Oh, no.
And fan mail for James.
40,000.
Doctor Who Podshock from the Gallifreyan Embassy.
You know, that guy James was really cool. Oh, yeah, we blew that.
I'm the Doctor, and who are you?
The Gallifreyan Embassy presents Doctor Who Podshock, episode 169. My name is Ken Deep. Alongside Mr. Louis Trapani.
My name is Louis Trapani. Hello.
And across the great pond, none other than James Norton.
My name is James Norton. Hello.
And joining us from Texas, I believe. Eric, say your last name for me because I'm just going to botch it if I try this.
My name is Eric Escamilla, and I am in Texas.
Escamilla. Live from Texas is Mr. Eric Escamilla.
Yay, Eric.
Thanks for having me.
So it's 4 to Doomsday, heading to the caves of Androzani in today's show, as we'll review the final story of the Peter Davison era and probably one of the greatest stories of all time. That's coming up a little bit later on, plus your feedback. But first, we head into the newsroom to see what's going on in Doctor Who land.
Well, I guess the biggest news right now is that we're literally just, what, a week or so away from the next Doctor Who special, The Waters of Mars.
Mm.
Hooray!
And the trailers have been coming out fast and furious.
Yeah, mm-hmm. There's, you know, been a lot of... I think maybe it was you, Eric, you had joked that there's like a new trailer every day that's being released, and it certainly seems that way, that between trailers and clips and... we've pretty much seen it already.
Well, I think this is the part of the BBC's sort of... trying to tantalize people. Every day you turn on the telly and it seems like there's a new trailer saying, you know, Waters of Mars, 15th of November, 7 o'clock, blah, well, blah, blah.
They certainly had enough time to prepare them all because it's been how many months since the Planet of the Dead?
I don't know. Well, it was back in Easter, so it was April, something like that?
Yeah. Almost 8 months.
Yeah, a long time ago.
So they had 8 months to come up with a few trailers and promos for it.
Mm. Well, given that they wrapped all of the filming, God, ages ago, months and months ago. I think they finished filming a little before San Diego Comic Con, about a month before San Diego Comic Con or so. So going a while back now.
Mm. It's funny how months can go by and there'll be literally trickles of news, the tiniest little bits, you know, oh, so-and-so was cast or a still may emerge or something like that. And suddenly, when the official announcement is made, we've practically seen the whole damn thing at this point, with, between all the trailers and now the promotional photos. I mean, they're really, you know, letting it all go. We've seen, well, I don't want to spoil it. There's a few things that weren't even supposed to be seen that have already been seen, things in the story. And of course, they did a preview screening as well. So anybody who went to that was immediately posting detail.
Yes.
Detail.
Well, I've stayed away from a lot of major spoilers, but even just, you know, glimpsing across the odd website, you do come across a minor spoiler, which is a bit of a shame, really. I don't really understand why they have the... I can understand the need for a press screening. I get mm-hmm. that.
Yeah.
But I don't get the need for it several weeks in advance of the actual screening. Why yeah. not just do it a week ahead or a couple of days ahead, for heaven's sake? That
Especially
would get
that
people
most,
far more
most
excited
reporters
about it.
Write their stories on their laptops and email it to their editor. I mean, they,
yes.
And any writer worth their salt would have that story banged out in no time at all. So
yes, absolutely.
They could have done it the night before and it still would have been on time.
Mm, quite.
So even though we have said it before, I just wanted to, for those that are maybe hadn't heard our past episodes, it is, we were speculating it was going to be the 14th, which is a Saturday. It's actually Sunday, the 15th of November at 7 p.m. on BBC One, Orders of Mars.
Yeah, that alone is kind of a curveball because they've gone out of their way to make things the Saturday night show. What, Monday not being a bank holiday of any type, it's strange that it's going out on a Sunday.
Well, I'm going to have to ask what's the programming, what's the counter programming on Saturday night that they felt that maybe they didn't want to go up against, or
is it X Factor? Is that the show on Saturday?
No, X Factor is on ITV. So I think it may be what you lovely people call Dancing with the Stars, whereas we call it Strictly Come Dancing over this side of the pond. I think that's what why
I call
they
it must avoid TV.
It. Yeah, well, quite exactly. But I think that's probably why they chose the Sunday to show it, because Strictly is usually shown about 6 or 7 o'clock on a Saturday, I believe. As Lewis stated, already preempting me, I'm not a fan of the show. I've never watched it, but that's usually on a Saturday night, I think.
But that being said, it is, in a rare case for reality television, it is a rare piece of family programming. I mean, it's just as clean as it comes. You know, people are dancing and there's popular music.
And oh, yeah, and it's as old. It's one of the oldest reality, in inverted commas, shows. Really, it's undergone a revival recently. It really is a very, very old show. So, like Doctor Who, so it's got a big following, and like Doctor Who, it's family viewing, as you've rightly said, Ken.
Well, had they been going up against something that they felt would not draw their audience away, you know, Doctor Who is primarily a family show, and something like Strictly Come Dancing would actually give it some competition from a purely grandma, grandpa, mom, dad, you know, son-daughter kind of situation where the family might gather around and watch that. I'm not saying that's definitely going to happen, but I can understand their logic behind it. It's just a little weird going on a Saturday. But being a spooky episode and all, Sunday nights have always been X-File nights throughout the 90s, and Sunday nights for me were always a fright fest, so... that kind of programming. This is supposed to be a darker, more horror-based mm-hmm. story.
Sure.
And so for me, it's familiar territory.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, they said there's been sort of quotes everywhere in various forms of the media that this is one of the scariest Doctor Who episodes yet. But I have yet to have seen a single piece of publicity for any of the Doctor Who specials that hasn't said it's the scariest Doctor Who yet. They, well, yeah, they said that about Planet of the Dead. I believe that we were...
The Tritivores were the scariest monsters ever on Doctor Who.
Yes, so said the Sun. And, well, you know, exactly those words, so...
It is the British publicity version of ER in America. In America, on ER, every episode is a very special episode. Tonight is a very special episode of ER.
Yes, well, so special that they never killed it off.
It's special.
Mm. And it just kept going and going and going. Have they actually finished ER now yet, or is it still flogging a dead horse, so to speak?
I have no idea.
Couldn't tell you because I don't watch the show.
I believe last season was the last.
But they kept saying that it was a bit like Stargate.
Yeah,
this is the last ever, you know, series of Stargate.
Ozzy Osbourne farewell tours.
Mm. Well, this is the last, you know, SG-1 episode. But don't worry, next time there'll be Stargate Atlantis, and now we've got Stargate Universe.
Which I've not seen,
but maybe we can cover that on the next episode of Hitchhikers, given that a very prominent British actor is in the lead role, Robert Carlyle. So,
very good. Well, we should also note that Waters of Mars will be hitting the U.S. more than a month later on the 19th of December. I believe it's at 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific, and that's on the 19th is a Saturday, I think.
Mm. But interestingly, ABC in Australia, the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, is going to pick it up the week beginning of Sunday, the 6th of December. So that's pretty quick. The various places on the web have called it fast-tracking the last two Doctor Who specials, and this is no stranger to that. Although, only recently Australia has seen Children of Earth, which is a little bit bizarre.
Really?
Anyway, sorry to cut you off there, Liz.
No, it's good to know because I've been, you know, a little cautious with my Children of Earth spoilers now, but I figured maybe by now.
Well, free to air at least anyway.
All right. Well, I was going to say it's going to be on BBC America in the U.S., and BBC America announced that they'll be showing the other two specials during the holiday season this year. So they said they'll announce the dates come beginning of December, but that means that there won't be a long wait for those other two specials if they're planning to air them during the holiday. Well, they say during the holiday season, so that would mean, you know, perhaps days after the BBC.
Mm.
Well. Theoretically, they may be launching a series of Doctor Who's, meaning that if Waters of Mars is going out on the 19th, in a whole, for a one-hour block or a 90-minute block, whatever, however they're going to do that, we know that the two-part Tennant finale is slated to be, what, an hour and then an hour and a half? I mean, it's a pretty massive episode.
Me too.
They may split that a bit and get a longer run out of this. There's a possibility that although we're waiting on Waters, we may see the other two a little bit quicker, right on the heels of that, being that there'll be some publicity and some hype behind it. Why make the audience wait another month when we're cooking them? You know, people are there, they're spending money saying, here's your chance to see new Doctor Who, and there is worldwide, there's a lot of excitement about this Tenant finale. I mean, there's a huge buzz. Sure. The buzz has been building going all the way back to Planet of the Dead, where this frenzy began. And why not capitalize on it? Why not capitalize on that hype? Every minute that goes by that they're not airing it is an opportunity lost. And I think that they understand that at this point. Let's hope they're doing that and they don't make us wait till like February for the finale.
Well, while you're waiting for Waters of Mars, we can whet your appetite. The day before, we're having our seasonal meetup on Second Life, which is going to be the day before on Saturday, the 14th. And that's at the usual time and place in the land of Katrina on Second Life. And we've been doing this now seasonally, every 3 months or so. I can't believe it's already the autumn one now. It's November. It feels like we just had our August one. So we're encouraging you all to join us there. And all you need is any computer, Mac or PC, or I should say running Mac or Windows. Second Life is free software to download and to use. And you can meet up with all of us there on Second Life and other fans, Doctor Who fans, Torchwood fans. It's going to start at 1 p.m. Second Life time, which is the same as it's based in California, so it's the same as Pacific time in California, you know, on the West Coast. So join us. It's at 1 o'clock to 3. Victor First will be doing TARDIS tours, which will he'll give a tour of the land and other Doctor Who areas on Second Life. You can join him in his TARDIS, and then at 3 p.m. to 6 or 7, again Second Life time, so adjust your clocks accordingly to wherever you are. There'll be the live DJ and dancing, and it's the party aspect of it. But you can come by anytime you like. It's open, you know, 24 hours a day. Those are just the scheduled events that we'll all be meeting at.
I'll be there, I think, throughout the day. So,
yeah, fun times, and it's a good way. You know, you're waiting for Waters of Mars, and you got nothing else to do. Why not join us? And
yeah, and it's a good way to, you know, talk about what we can expect given what we've already seen or haven't seen.
And since most of us will not have seen it, you know, there'll be very few spoilers. So it's we were kind of worried because we were thinking that it might be coming out on the 14th, Waters of Mars, which meant that half the crowd at this event may have already seen it. So we were kind of worried that it may scare people off because they may not want to get spoiled.
Yes, but thankfully not the case. And do come along, especially for, well, the whole event is fantastic. But Victor does a fantastic job of showing people around.
Oh,
makes you feel really welcome to Second Life, if it's particularly if you're a newbie. The DJs are always fantastic. It's always an absolute blast. I really look forward to our SL meetups. And it's just so crazy to think now that this is, you know, it doesn't seem like 3 months since the last one. It really
doesn't. It doesn't. I know.
And, you know, I remember seeing screenshots that Eric had posted on Twitter of what how Victor had decorated all of Katrina in honor of our event. And
Victor does an outstanding job, and he's doing it again. There was already a picture posted a couple days ago, I think, which you know, he's up to his magnificent tricks again. You know, doing some wonderful work there for us, and we appreciate everything that Victor does. I think HBK is another one of the people there involved.
Yes,
on
indeed.
And along with Nick and Terry, who also help out each time. I know Terry does some Doctor Who Podshock shirts that are given out.
Very
at
nice
events.
As well. Very, very nice.
And, you know, you're still in the privacy of your own home still, so those that choose to can lubricate themselves with whatever liquid refreshments they have on hand.
So. You did worry me a little bit there, Lewis. Careful now.
Well, I'm just saying, it's open to all ages. There is a DJ there, but we won't proof you coming in.
Although alcoholic beverages may not be supplied to...
Well, we won't be supplying them, but as I said, what you have in your own little cabinet, you know, under your computer there is up to you.
Entirely. Anyway, let's stay on target and get back to Doctor Who news before, you know, we completely go off the rails and lose all of our listeners.
Well, the other big thing that we're waiting for is Dreamland, and there was a clip that was released that is on our site, if you haven't seen it yet, gallifreyanembassy.org or podshock.net, of the animation of Dreamland, which has taken many people, including myself, by surprise.
Yes, ditto.
Ditto.
We've seen just one still before this. At least I've only seen one still of what this was going to look like before, before this. So, and we've heard about how fantastic it was going to be. And so we had very high expectations. So then when we saw the clip, it just kind of did not meet what we were sort of expecting. It seemed, and I think Eric, I must say that I was privileged to be on a guest on Eric's show, the Sci-Fi Party Line, and we talked a little bit about it there. And So anyone that's heard that podcast will, this may sound a little bit familiar to you, but I think, Eric, you had made the comparison to the 1980s music video, yes, Money for Nothing.
Dire Straits video. That's all I could think about with the movement of the characters and their joints. And
it's not as smooth as I anticipated the animation. Now, no. We should just clarify that this is CG animated. When we're saying animation, it's not cell animated. It's CG rendering animation, sure, style.
But I have to say, I don't know if you guys will remember this, and I'm probably showing my naivety here, but I don't know if you remember a children's CGI animation called Reboot.
Yes.
Yes.
And
yes.
I was reminded drastically of that. And I don't think, I think graphically it's pretty good, I think. It's meant to be sort of slightly cartoony and not over the top. But the animation, it's just so static. It's just so rigid. There's no sort of fluidity to it. I'm quite, in that respect, I'm a bit disappointed that they didn't just, you know, do another Infinite Quest, because that actually, I believe, was CG. It was, you know, it was all done via computer. It wasn't,
yeah, I think it was
hand-drawn,
sort of like a Flash style, Flash animation.
Yeah, precisely. It was all sort of vector drawing. And this isn't, you know, the stills look fantastic, and everybody was talking about that still of the Doctor in front of that diner and the TARDIS with the sonic screwdriver and everything. It's just they. I don't know whether they haven't had a great deal of money to spend on this. The acting from the voice was superb. Yeah. I thought in the little clips that we'd seen. It's just a shame that perhaps the animation hasn't led up to everybody's expectations.
Yeah, I think you probably hit the nail right on the head there. I think they probably didn't have the budget or the time to really invest in.
It just seems, it looks like one bloke's done it in his bedroom somewhere, really. I mean,
but not to do
the story any disservice, because it's written, of course, by Phil Ford, who's been doing a fantastic job on the Sarah Jane Adventures.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I haven't seen yesterday's and today's, but last week's with the Doctor was terrific. The best Sarah Jane episodes yet, in my humble opinion, of course. I mean, it's exciting, and I do want to see it, and it's a little bit unfortunate, the timing. It's coming out on... the first episode is going to be on the 21st of November, which is...
Oh, they have announced the dates, then?
They've announced the dates. So the first episode is on the 21st of November, which is a Saturday, on the BBC's Red Button service. So if you go to BBC One or Two or whatever and press your little red button, if you've got a digital set-top box or... Sky or whatever, you'll be able to select it and watch it on demand. And then there are five episodes in total, or six episodes in total, I think, and each will be broadcast each day after the previous one. So it's very much like Children of Earth in that respect.
Oh, okay. So there'll be consecutive days. Okay.
Yes, exactly. So they'll be available all day on Sky and Virgin, for people who are lucky enough to have cable and or satellite.
Those in the UK.
Yeah, but it's on Freeview. It's only going to be on a limited service, unfortunately. So I presume that means that you'll only be able to watch it at specific times. However, the good news for those who don't have Freeview or satellite or cable, the episodes are also going to be available on the Doctor Who website.
I'm sure locked down to the UK only.
Probably, which is I'm quite disappointed about in that aspect, because while it's being shown, I'm not going to be in the UK. I'm going to be in Boston.
Uh-huh. So you'll be one of us.
I will be one of you, indeed. I'll have to suffer in not being able to watch Doctor Who, because I won't be in the UK.
It's a few hundred miles from us, actually.
Yes, indeed. Indeed.
We'll throw a stone at you.
Well, with a big catapult.
I'm just saying, you'll be a stone's throw away, but it may sound like an attack. Launch the stones. Yeah, I think, well, I think what you said is actually, again, right on the mark. The acting is brilliant. The audio-wise, this sounds like a great audio adventure. And I said, you know, if the, because I found the animation a little distracting. So I said, if worst-case scenario comes, I'll just treat it as an audio adventure and you know, just glance up at it when
that's what I was thinking as well, yeah.
It really seems to me that the animated characters in Dreamland, they don't seem to be able to keep pace with the great voice acting that David Tennant delivers, and they don't, the CGI characters aren't able to emote, not even as well, I don't think, as the Flash animated characters are, because
no,
those seem even better suited with their facial movements and eyebrows and
but that's it. The, you know, if you just look at it, the video, it's also static, it's also still. There's, you know, when Cosgrove Hall animated things like The Invasion, the lost episodes of The Invasion with Patrick Troughton and Scream of the Shalker, and even before that, Sharda, the Eighth Doctor, Big Finish story, and most recently, The Infinite Quest. When, you know, they never stood still. The animation looked very fluid.
How long are you going to be in the States for, James?
About 2 weeks. I'm going to be working at Northeastern University for a short spell, and also there's a big MRS Materials Research Society, something along those lines, a big massive conference there in Boston, so it should be a good laugh, should be interesting anyway.
Well, perhaps we'll have to make a road trip.
if you want to come and visit, I'd love to see you, as always.
What else is going on now? We have
We had some guests announced for Gallifrey 2010. Is that
indeed
is that big good news? I thought it was.
It was excellent. I found out about this when I got my wonderful postcard from Gallifrey through the post with some fantastic artwork on the front of it. It's Jenny. Obviously played by Georgia Moffat. It's a fantastic drawing, and it's credited to Amy Steinberger, which is, I thought, it's immediately, you could tell it wasn't on the back. I was like, wow, you know, Georgia Moffat's going to be there, which we knew. Tommy Knight, Sarah Sutton, we knew about. Phil Ford, John Fay, Alice Troughton, Paul Cornell, Rob Shearman, Gary Russell, Jason Ellery, Tony Lee. Oh, amazing stuff. And they added
Katie Manning, Deborah Watling, Fraser Hines, John Levine, yes, Nicholas Briggs, Gareth Roberts, Colin Teague.
It goes on and on. It's just like a star-studded convention. And I was so thrilled that Deborah Watling is going to be there.
A little twinkle in her eye for you, AJ.
Brilliant. I met her a couple of years ago. When I went to Liverpool, the Cavern event that they had over there, and I interviewed her in the green room, and she's a real laugh. She's a true lady. She's an absolute star. She's got a superb sense of humour, a really friendly, lovely lady. I'm really looking forward to seeing her again, to see her. For anybody who hasn't seen her speak, in my opinion, she's terrific, and you should just come to Galley just for her. But the rest of the lineup is just amazing. And Ian Levine's going to be there as well, again.
When you pair people up, when you see like Katie Manning and John Levine right off the bat, there's people who've worked together and they must have great stories and great chemistry. And then you have Deborah Watling and Fraser Hines. You pair them up, they have great chemistry and great stories. And then you mix and match, and I'm sure there's wonderful stuff between all of them. The classic guests are great this year. And you put on top of that, you have Georgia Moffat, and then you have many of the behind-the-scenes people like Graham Harper and Gareth Roberts and Phil Ford and Paul Cornell. And so you have a blend of classic show and current show. It's just really – it's shaping up to be fantastic. As always, James, Lewis, and I will be there, and we're going to do our Sunday morning tradition, our live Podshock on stage in front of everybody on
Breakfast
that Sunday.
Shock.
Make your plans. What's that?
Breakfast shock.
Breakfast shock, yeah. It's been a tradition the last couple years. This one is shaping up to be something spectacular. We, as always, have some surprises in mind, so we hope you'll join us. Plus, it's going to be the probably the largest gathering of Doctor Who podcasters ever, which should be quite fantastic. I know all the guys from Radio Free Skaro, as well as guys from people, I should say people, because there's a few girls coming as well, from Doctor Who podcasts all over the world.
Plus one. Plus yes. One more. We have to add Mr. Eric, who's with us right now, may be joining us. Right, Eric?
Yes, I got the days off from work, and next I'm securing on all the rest of my arrangements. So, yeah.
So add one more podcaster to the mix.
Yeah, definitely. This is really going to be something fantastic.
There it's may worth... be more podcasters there than non-podcasters.
Yeah.
And we hope you'll join us at Gallifrey for Blackjack 21, February 26, 27, 28, 2010 at the Los Angeles Airport Marriott Hotel. And live on stage, Doctor Who Podchalk. There should be something spectacular. I want to thank the people from Gallifrey One for putting us on the postcard as well.
That yes, was it's
really nice to let people know that we are going to continue to do our Sunday morning tradition.
Mm.
It's worth getting up early for.
Yeah, and there's always a. Last year, I was just astonished by the crowd. I thought, you know, well, we'll roll out of bed, a bit hungover, have a bit of breakfast, and see who does the same. But it was almost packed, the room. It was amazing.
It's surprised us both times that we've done this so far, that we've had people who have made the effort to be there for us. And we increased in size from the first time we did it to the second time, and hopefully we'll do it again this year. And
Last time we had a great time. We had Phil Collinson, the then producer of Doctor Who. We had a surprise guest there, which was Daphne Ashbrook, and we had Toby Haddock.
She wasn't at the convention. You know, she came just for Podchalk, which was great.
Yeah.
And Toby Haddock there as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the first time that Lewis, James, and I recorded a Podchalk together, so that was kind of fun.
Live in person on the same...
in the same room, live in person. Hopefully we'll repeat that magic. And a lot of people working behind the scenes to help make that happen. Again this year and make it something special. So that should be pretty cool. And if by the way, if you're in the midst of you're going to register for Gallifrey, don't forget to mention that you heard it on Podchalk. You can always put that in your notes if you're ordering online or however it is you're placing your order for tickets. Let them know that you're coming there, that you heard it through Podchalk, and that you're perhaps being influenced to go. Because of the show, though.
I certainly will, and it's certainly the truth.
Because we badger everybody.
You've got to go. It's amazing.
And one other thing, I'm mentioning something that's coming up pretty soon, and that's November 27, 28, 29, 2009, Chicago TARDIS 2009. I will be going along with Billy, the white robot. And I've just recently heard from Jennifer Adams Kelly, who has been on the show in the past. About doing some stuff, either being involved in some of the panels or doing some interviews and stuff like that. So that should be something pretty cool. I'll actually be there in person and reporting for Podchalk at Chicago TARDIS 2009.
Mm. Fantastic.
Fantastic.
Also make a mention that the white robot will be there at Gallifrey as well. We don't want to.
Yes, absolutely.
Forget what's Billy. That? I just wanted to because we just spoke about Gallifrey. I just wanted to reassure everyone that the white robot Billy will also be there too. So
at Gallifrey, Joshua Liu and Billy and Amy have been helping out a lot, getting some of the behind the scenes things taken care of.
And
for this
TARDIS
tower
as well. So the TARDIS will be back.
Absolutely.
And it will probably be upgraded to the TARDIS of Matt Smith
with the St. John's emblem and all that.
It's there. All right, one last bit of news is that David Tennant may be appearing on a regular basis on American TV in a pilot that was just greenlit by NBC called Rex Is Not Your Lawyer, where David Tennant stars in the lead role of Rex Alexander, who plays a lawyer that suffers panic attacks and then will have to kind of coach and teach his clients how to represent themselves. It's an hour-long comedy/drama that will be on NBC if all goes well, and it's being directed by David Semel, who did pilots for Heroes, so it's coming from some good stock there, I would think. And So we may be seeing David Tennant on a regular basis. Well, we already are right now. He's hosting Masterpiece Contemporary, which is the formerly Masterpiece Theater. So, but we may be seeing him more on a regular basis in a lead role here.
That's fantastic. You can't have enough David Tennant on your screens.
Hmm. What's interesting about all of this is that after this news broke, there's been loads of people on Twitter and Facebook posting YouTube videos of David Tennant's American accent and what they can sort of hope to expect. And
oh, he's going to be so doing an American accent. I didn't even think of that. I just assumed he'll be playing an Englishman in this series.
I don't know, but that's what people are assuming is that you know, he's going to be putting on an American accent for the show. So there we are. Actually, before we go into our review, I'd just like to briefly give an update for our North American listeners who love their Doctor Who DVDs. This is just hot off the press today. Is that March is going to see the Dalek War box set come to North America, which essentially is the release of the two Third Doctor stories, Frontier in Space and Planet of the Daleks, obviously starring John Pertwee as the Doctor and Katie Manning as Joe Grant. Interestingly, the commentary has Katie Manning, Barry Letts, who of course recently passed, bless his soul, and script editor Terrence Dix.
That's really one of my favorites. Frontier in Space, just a fun story. Looking forward to having that on DVD. And Planet of the Daleks is not bad. That's a Dalek story I kind of like from the Third Doctor.
Yeah, and in the same vein, the Seventh Doctor story, Remembrance of the Daleks, is also going to be released on the same day as in terms
the special
of
edition
a special
one?
Edition. Yeah, which should be interesting.
So that's in March. Like,
that's in March, yeah.
Just a month later after it's at least in the U.S. I'm not sure if there have been U.K. announced dates yet, but in the U.S. there's going to be February 2nd, there'll be all the specials of Doctor Who will be out on DVD and Blu-ray in various forms, either individually or in a special
box set.
Yeah.
That's great.
Very, very
cool. And pretty quick, too. Backing the idea that BBC America is going to show it first.
Yes. Well, now that it's kind of really cool that they have that association now. I know it's a real shame that it's no longer on the Sci-Fi Channel, but the beauty of it being on BBC America, well, SIFI indeed, is that you'll get it in the States a lot quicker. The downside, of course, is that not everybody can get BBC America, unfortunately.
Yeah. Like here on Long Island.
Yeah.
Well, you can if you're DirecTV or Dish, but it's for the cable service that's dominant here now.
No.
Sad times.
Come on, Cablevision, let's do it.
Let's go.
They were one of the first to have BBC World News. That's what's so surprising about this. So it's not like they don't have a relationship with British-based programming, you know?
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it?
I was just talking to someone that works for Cablevision, and they said they contacted the programming department, and they're claiming it's just the expense of it. And I'm like, well, you know, they can run their own ads spots during, you know, that's what usually, you know, Cablevision does sometimes during these, you know, ad breaks.
Local spots. Yeah. It's done on every cable channel.
And there's definitely a demand for it, so I can't, you know, as opposed to some of these other ancillary channels.
We'll run a commercial. Crazy Eddie spot. Are you wrapping up the news?
Yes.
It's quickly degenerating. Let's move
on. Wrapping up the news.
Caves.
Move along.
We'll be right back with our review of Caves of Androzani.
You're listening to Doctor Who Podshock. This is Colin Baker.
You have heard us mention it before. If you love Doctor Who Podshock and you also love British science fiction, be sure to subscribe to our other podcast we do, The Hitchhiker's Guide to British Sci-Fi. That's right. Ken, James, and myself team up as we do here in Doctor Who Podshock, but this time we paint with a much broader palette, covering all British science fiction. Everything from Blake 7 to Torchwood to The Prisoner, UFO, Space 1999, The Thunderbirds, Tripods, Day of the Triffids, Sarah Jane Adventures, Red Dwarf, War of the Worlds, Tomorrow People, even Doctor Who, you name it. If it's British and it's science fiction, we try to cover it. Find it on iTunes or go to Hitchhiker's Guide to BritishSciFi.com or ArtTrap.com for show listings and RSS feeds. The Hitchhiker's Guide to British Sci-Fi. Hi, this is just a quick reminder about the Podshock Supporting Subscriber Program. Now you can support our podcast and at the same time get extra content made available for supporting subscribers. When you become a Podshock Supporting Subscriber, you will have access to special extra shows for supporting subscribers, episodes produced just for supporting subscribers, and or premium shows made available for supporting subscribers, plus discount offers, giveaways, and other special benefits. Don't hesitate, become a supporting subscriber today. We are offering supporting subscriptions at a special introductory rate of only $5 a month. That's not much more than a large coffee at a coffee specialty shop. No huge investment made up front. You can cancel anytime, and you can feel better knowing that you're supporting a show you love and help ensure that it can continue and grow. Our regular show will continue on our main feeds. Episodes made possible by our supporting subscribers, donations, and sponsors. And we're back with Doctor Who Podshock. And before we go into our review of Caves of Androzani, we want to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Audible.com. Audible has been a sponsor to Doctor Who Podshock for a while now. We do thank them for that. And if you're not familiar with Audible.com, they're the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment, information, educational programming. They kind of cover all their bases. There's 50,000 titles, over 50,000 titles to choose from, over 80,000 hours of audio programming. And if you like podcasts, which we're assuming you do, you're listening to our show, this is works very well for you because it's similar in nature. You can listen to it when you like, where you like, how you like. You can sign up for a free trial, and when you do, you get a free audiobook download. And to do that, go to www.audiblepodcast.com/podshock to get your free audiobook today, and that could be of anything of your choosing. Now, with that said, we're going to focus on a Doctor Who title. Last time, we looked at The Hornet's Nest, Part 2, which was The Dead Shoes. This time, we're going to focus a little bit on, well, not a little bit, we're going to look at Part 3, which is The Circus of Doom, which is Tom Baker's comeback as the Doctor, which is a long time waiting. We were kind of joking off air about someone else's long time comeback that we're so waiting for. But this is Tom Baker in The Hornet's Nest, Part 3, The Circus of Doom.
And evil ones at that.
For safekeeping, Mike. As long as they're inside the force shield around this house, they can't creep out and menace the living. Night is when they're most active and malign.
And so for the duration, we're stuck down here. Just the two of us. Waiting in the cellar for morning. Like old times, Doctor. Speaking of which, Mrs. Whimsy claimed you'd met these Hornet chaps before. But in the past, in, what was it, 1832?
We were moving in opposite directions relative to each other. And so my duty, as I saw it, was not only to stow things safely away here in Nest Cottage, but also to pursue my insect foes into history.
Are you saying that you went on another jaunt in that old death trap of yours after these noxious beasties?
Exactly.
And does that mean you have another tale to spin for me?
Ah, well, it's the dark before the dawn, Mike. My stories are getting darker too, I'm afraid.
Why am I not surprised?
Leaving Mrs. Whimsy here acting as my housekeeper some 70 years after her own time. Oh, she was most impressed by all the mod cons. I gave the ballet slippers to the TARDIS to consider. The old girl is like a bloodhound when she gets a scent. Me too. I'm very persistent when my dander's up.
So, where did you go next?
First the tea, and when it's ready.
And there you have it, the hornet's nest.
That's so good, isn't it? I love it. He's definitely getting more comfortable as the recordings went on. You can see this is the third part, and Tom Baker more and more settling into those old moments.
Mm.
Absolutely.
Once again, we encourage you to check it out. You can go to audiblepodcast.com/podchalk and make that your free selection, or any other title from audible.com, and we thank them for continuing to be our sponsor.
Yeah, thank you, Audible.
Yes. Stand there. Couldn't we have a chair? It's been rather a strenuous day.
You will stand there until I finish with you. And when you address me, you will call me sir.
May I ask who you are, sir?
I am General Chelak, commander of all federal forces on this planet.
Well done, sir. I suppose you started in the ranks.
Under emergency regulations, anyone caught supplying arms to the android rebels faces summary execution.
But we weren't supplying arms. We were... Well, we just found them.
Sir?
Sir.
If you cooperate, I'm prepared to extend clemency. If you don't cooperate, you'll be shot. Is that clear?
Couldn't put it more plainly. Exactly how do we cooperate?
Sir.
Thank you.
Do not provoke me.
Sorry?
I want to know your names and the names of your confederates. I want full details of all armaments deliveries, where and how they are brought in, who supplies them back on Major, and what your communication arrangements are with Sharaz Jek.
Well, I'm generally known as the Doctor. My young friend here is known as Perry. That is Purple Gilliam Brown.
Don't waste my time.
You know, if we could just sit down and talk about this little misunderstanding in a civilized manner. My young friend here has been complaining of pains in her legs. You can see for yourself she's suffering from some sort of urticaria.
Silence!
Come to that, I don't feel too well myself.
Yes?
Signal, sir. Trow Morgus is on vid. He wants to speak to you immediately, General.
I'll take it. Put them in there.
I don't think he likes us very much.
Well, now we turn to our review of our Regeneration series that we've been reviewing here on Doctor Who Podshock. And next up is The Caves of Androzani, which is Peter Davison's last story as the Doctor. And it is an exciting one at that. It's directed by Graham Harper, who we are familiar with if you've been keeping up with the latest Doctor Who stories. He's one of the, well, I think he's the only director from the classic series that has been carried over to the new series. It's written by Robert Holmes, and it's obviously stars Peter Davison and Nicola Bryant as Perry. So, it's a very dark, mysterious story, and the tone is set very much from the beginning. And I have to say, talking about casting, it's excellent casting all around. John Normington as Morgus, Christopher Gable as Sharaz Jek. It doesn't really get any better than this. It's if Peter Davison needed to leave on a high note, this was it. It's an exciting story. Well, let's just talk about the story a little bit. We wind up in the traditional rock quarry on Doctor Who.
Wouldn't be the same without it.
No,
the same one from the Three Doctors, I believe.
It's a vacation spot of the universe. It's Androzani Minor, which you want to book for your next flight if you want to get away from it all. I'm joking, of course. It's a very dark and in fact, even though this is one of the episodes that I would mostly recommend for people, I had a friend ask me about they want you to introduce their young son to some Doctor Who, some classic Doctor Who episodes that they haven't seen yet, and and this was among them, but with a caveat saying that, you know, depending on how, you know, because every young person is different as far as how they. Some can take scarier things more than others, so this is a bit intense, and rightly so. But it's excellent nonetheless. And before I go into particulars, I just wanted to go and see what everyone else's initial take of this was. This was, again, Peter Davison's last hurrah.
Yeah, and recently, I think it was in Doctor Who magazine this year, right, was voted as the best yes. Doctor Who story of all time. And I remember watching this as a kid, and it scared the bejesus out of me. It really did. I can completely understand why it's perhaps, whilst it's a terrific story, and I think we've discussed this before a little bit on Podshock, you know, when somebody has emailed in or whatever and said, you know, what's a good episode to get me into the classic series? I'm not sure it's a good introduction to Doctor Who in that respect, because any sort of regeneration story, you know, can weird people out a little bit if they're just trying to get to grips with the character and then they go and die and change completely or change their appearance and personality. But anything with the master in it's got to be good. And I completely loved, I mean, as a kid, I just remember being really scared by the bats in it and just the caves as a whole, and then the whole dark and gloomy forebode to the whole story. And the whole point that the Doctor knows that he's going to die. And, you know, it saves Perry through kindness and through love of his companion. Not to spoil the entire story, but, you know, it really sort of resonated with me that as a kid. And it's one of the very first few images I remember of Doctor Who, aside from watching all of the reruns and stuff on TV. This was one of the episodes that really sort of stuck in my brain, the whole gloom and sort of darkness and despair of the show. And it's only really as I've gotten older and can appreciate the storyline a bit better that I've realized what a fantastic story it is. And the casting's superb, the acting's great, the way it's shot, I think, for the time is immensely sophisticated, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, this is probably maybe, if I'm not mistaken, probably the first time that cinema verte was used in shooting, where it's you see some shots done in handheld, and there was some breaking away from usual patterns in Doctor Who in many respects in this episode. And but just going back to what you had said, your first initial impression of this as a kid watching it, I have to say, I remember, you know, rewatching this now, I'm reminded to the first time watching this and that first cliffhanger ending after part one, where they're basically assassinated and you see it happen on screen, and then you have that, you know, closing credits. And, you know, at the end of every, you know, cliffhanger of Doctor Who, you start wondering, you know, the first time you're watching it, how are they going to get out of this? And this time watching it, well, there's no way, we've seen them shot, there's no way they're going to get out of this. How the hell are they going to get out of this? And then, well, you know, I don't want to spoil it, but they do manage to get out of it. But it was an incredible cliffhanger at the time. And I have to say that this story has, even part three going into four, had another great dramatic cliffhanger with the Doctor. And going back to what James, what you were saying as far as use of good lighting, reflections that were used here, really set the tone. The music was haunting throughout the whole thing. It really set the tone of the episode. And
the special effects, I think, were pretty.
The special effects, we've seen some effects that I don't think we had seen before on Doctor Who. I mean, for that time, this was you know, with the Doctor leaning off, you could shot from above him, and he's on a a ledge, and you can see the stuff flowing underneath him, and other shots of him climbing up in the cave looking for the bat's milk, and effect shots like that worked very well. Now, on the other side of the coin, I think what was a bit rubbish was the creature, which looked like, you know, someone in a dragon suit. But I can forgive that because the rest of the story is so outstanding, and I think if you know, if they ever do go back and kind of do some CGI to this, maybe that would be the only thing that they could really kind of enhance for this story. Maybe that, and, you know, maybe get rid of Sheriff Jack playing Dig Dug down in his dungeon.
I was just watching it with a friend yesterday, and they said, "What is that on the screen? Is that a video game? What is he doing?" And that's exactly what it was.
It looked like he was playing Dig Dug. So, Ken, we haven't heard from you. What was your take?
I loved this episode, and I remember it very vividly, watching it the first time, and for that matter, the second time. Mostly because this was the end of the Doctor Who package that existed up to that point, because they didn't finish the season and show Twin Dilemma. They ended at the end of Peter Davison. So just as Colin Baker was becoming the Doctor, here in the States we would see those first few seconds of Colin Baker, and that was the end. We would go back to either Robot, or you'd go back even further if you had an expanded package beyond that. And so this was that had a huge impression on me when I was younger. But like James said, this is an episode that seems to grow with you as you get older. You find more and more to appreciate, and great art has the ability to have something to be found in it upon reviewing it over and over again. Something that really stands the test of time. The reason it stands the test of time is you want to watch it again because you gleaned something else out of it. And that happens with Caves of Androzani. And I think that's the reason, compared to the 1998 survey in DWN, the reason it climbed to number one over time. Fans who have discovered Doctor Who since its return in 2005 gravitate to this episode because there are elements of this episode that translate well into today's show. And it starts with Graham Harper.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason why he's the one guy who's made the transition from the classic show till now.
It's still very modern today, even watching it today. I mean, outside of that, like I said, the creature, but I think it holds up very well today.
It holds up very well. And what Graham Harper, this was his directorial debut for Doctor Who. And what happens, kind of like when Jonathan Turner became producer of Doctor Who, both of them had worked on the show prior to this. And when they had their chance, in their mind, they had a lot of things over the many years of being around Doctor Who. They brought their best right at the beginning. And so when you watch that final season of Tom Baker and the first season of Jonathan Turner, we've talked about JNT's making the interior of the TARDIS a little more uniform, bringing some continuity there. Well, Graham Harper steps into the shoes, and steps into the directorial shoes. The first thing he does is turn the lights off.
Mm.
Because some of the directors that have worked under Jonathan Turner, while very skillful from a dramatic point of view, went with just very straightforward shooting techniques, with very few exceptions and in very few stories, maybe Earthshock being one of them, where they tried some different things. Graham Harper turned the lights off, brought in some mysterious music. He had excellent casting. He managed to get Robert Holmes's duo thing that he does, where he pairs off characters to not be corny at any point. They're serious. There's interesting dynamics among them, and sometimes they're interchangeable in this story, and that really works very well. And the thing that is always mentioned about this story is that there are no good guys. Take the Doctor and Perry out of it, and there's nobody who's good. There's anti-heroes. There's just straight-up mm-hmm. bad guys. There are people who are neutral, and it has great cliffhangers. And much like the reason The Deadly Assassin holds a warm spot in my heart for its incredible cliffhangers, this story too, like Lewis said, this execution going on of the Doctor and Perry is ridiculous. And for a kids' television show to execute the main characters as a cliffhanger by gunshots is ridiculous.
Was Mary Whitehouse still alive? She must. If she wasn't, this would have killed her.
She was. She was alive.
It's Davison's last story. He goes out on a high note. He goes out in a serious story. He's very brave, very bold. All the things that people who don't like the Fifth Doctor, there's nothing in this story that they could point to and say, yep, see, that's what we didn't like about the Doctor. He's at his bravest and his finest in his last story. That scene, too, with the crash and what was it, in episode, end of episode 3, but I'm not going to let you stop me now. I mean, that is incredible.
It's intense, yeah.
And the production design on the story is excellent as well. Like you said, the one Glitch is perhaps the monster in the story, and even that, again through Graham Harper's skill direction, is kept to a minimum. In the hands, he didn't allow that monster to become the Murker. Mm. He didn't allow the caves of Androzani to be the sea base in Warriors of the Deep. And I adore Warriors of the Deep. I know it's always bashed. And I know the reason it's bashed is because they just needed to turn the lights off. Well, Graham Harper took that lesson into Caves of Androzani. Yeah.
And he did the best he could with what he had to work with there. And he did it very skillfully.
The planets of Androzani Major and Minor are well fleshed out, despite the fact that most of it's done through dialogue. We hear about the mines and the business conglomerates and the Presidium and all these kind of things. It's all done through dialogue. And when Doctor Who is at its greatest is when it allows the viewer's imagination to fill in the blanks. And that's what the story does.
Yeah. And I think, Ken, what you said, none of the characters are, you know, take the Doctor and Perry out of this. None of the characters are really good characters. And in fact, no one at the end of this story comes out on top. You know, everyone has suffered a defeat.
And this is also the best this is by far Nicola Bryant's best performance as Perry.
Yes. Yeah.
There are other stories that I like her in, but if this would have been Perry through the whole show, she probably would have gone down as a legendary companion. I mean, legendary, you know, the kind of warm, fuzzy stuff that people feel about Sarah Jane. They just be like, this girl's great. When they get into mm-hmm. some of those early Colin Baker runs and she does the whiny bit, I think that's, contrast that to what you see in this story.
There was something very funny about that, Major.
Didn't make me laugh.
And Chellak said they were fighting android rebels.
Who cares who they're fighting? We seem to be the fall guys.
Yes, do try and speak English, Perry.
Doctor, we've got about an hour to live. That Morgus wants us dead.
Yes, that's another odd thing. He had us braided up and down in front of him, then once he'd seen us, he seemed to lose all interest. I found that rather insulting.
I can take an insult. I just don't want to be shot. Doctor, what are we going to do?
I've really no idea. I'm sorry I got you into this, Perry.
It's all right. It wasn't your fault. I mean, it's as much my fault as yours.
Yes. I should never have followed those tracks. Curiosity's always been my downfall. How's your rash, by the way?
It seems to be coming out in blisters now.
Me too. A fungus obviously had some very toxic properties.
Well, don't suppose we'll die of it inside the next hour. Anything interesting?
No. It's like a graveyard.
Well, there was that segment, I guess, in part three or in most of part four where they're separated, you know, or Perry's unconscious and all that. So, you know, they had to, Perry kind of worked on her own for a bit. That was good seeing her in that respect, too. This story is also a big nod to Phantom of the Opera, I must say.
What you get as well in the, what you get Doctor Who at its best, going back to what I mentioned about production design, you look at the Robots of Death. One of the reasons why Robots of Death is remembered so highly is the production design of the robots as an example, that they're well thought out. Well, these robots are meant to be just these
tools,
sort of very autonomic.
Mm-hmm.
They're not supposed to be sophisticated. They're supposed to be basic labor. And they're well realized.
Which goes to contrast to the other androids that are very lifelike and are passed off as humans. So it showed the contrast there because, that's how it made it believable that these characters were unaware that they were infiltrated by robots that were humans because they, you know, the other robots were very unhuman-like.
Also, talking about casting, I mean, the casting was top-notch. There are some very interesting subtleties in some of the performances, and I'll give you one example that really It's just incredible. The general in the story is portrayed as this bumbling general that can't get anything done early on. And then when he realizes that he's being undercut, that he's got a spy in his midst, and that the reason why he continues to fail is not because he's a bad general. Once he realizes that, there's this change in his confidence.
Mm-hmm.
Because at first he's kind of playing the guy that, oh, geez, I don't know what's going on here. I'm trying my best. And these private citizens are coming down on him, and they're, you know, I can't believe you can't get anything done. That kind of storyline. Then suddenly he realizes, he gets word that, oh no, Sheriff Jack has been monitoring your communications, and he suddenly realizes that it is not his skill as a general that's been defeating him. He's not being outthought, that he's doing everything that he's supposed to do, but the advantage of the opponent is that he knows all the moves. When that changes, notice the change in the performance, the confidence returns to the general ever so subtly, and that's the kind of stuff that's a skilled director with great actors and a great script.
All the actors were outstanding. They took the parts very serious. None of this was, I mean, no one was over the top, even though they were, could have very easily gone over the top. Sheriff Jack could have, Morgus, I mean, John Normington as Morgus was incredible because he was so subtle, yet but also very eccentric. He broke down that fourth wall, which was at first, you know, is a little unnerving because it looked like, you know, he seems to be talking to the audience. But then again, this is a character that probably doesn't have a lot of friends. And it wouldn't surprise me that if he's, you know, just kind of does this and, you know, is talking to himself as if he was talking to someone else and not really talking to us, the audience. But it,
I see,
again,
I don't take it him as looking in the camera.
Well, that's what I'm saying, that he's not. Yeah. I mean, it looks like he is, and perhaps he is, but I read it differently. I read that he's just kind of talking to himself or talking as if he was talking to someone else because he really doesn't have any friends to talk to.
And no one he can confide in, And the way he assassinates the president is ridiculous.
Yeah.
and well thought out. Mm-hmm. Again, there's a level of believability to it. The idea of pushing a president into an empty elevator shaft seems a little over the top, but it's well thought out. There's no witnesses, and he turned in, the elevator must have been broken. The door's open, and he stepped around. I didn't have any idea what was going on, and he fell.
But then he orders the maintenance guy to be shot.
Yeah, and so there's this level to what is going on that is ridiculous. Plus the buildup of the drugs that they use in the episodes. There's a message behind that as well, and the cost. What is the cost to all these things? And I always love when they beat up on corporations, and they do that in this. Mm-hmm. They show them to be just evil and merciless.
Eric, we haven't heard much from you.
Yes. I'm so glad to be here to talk about this episode. For me, like James, this episode holds a very special place in my heart. It's perhaps my favorite classic story. It has to be, and one I've seen more than any other classic story. I was a child in the UK from the Five Doctors through the end of the Trial of the Time Lord. And this episode is the one I remember the most, probably because it was obviously my first regeneration for one. And obviously that was a very big deal at the time. I remember that very well. And also, Perry was probably my favorite companion from that time span I just mentioned. And so this is just an episode I've always come back to and watched many times when I had it copied on VHS later after that. And just like it was said as well, you know, as a child, you know, you just go along with, you know, the suspense and the scariness and whatnot. But watching it back now as an adult many times over now as an adult, and even recently, I've watched it at least 3 times in the last 4 months. It's amazing the things that come out from an adult perspective, because you guys were already kind of alluding to these things, but allusions abound throughout the script. And Lewis mentioned it is like the Phantom of the Opera.
Mm-hmm.
It's also extremely, extremely similar to Frank Herbert's Dune in so many ways. I could just go on and list all the similarities.
Sure,
the Spice, the Spetrox, the you know, the Fremen, well, not the Fremen exactly, the Emperor being, it's everywhere. But more specifically, this story, it harkens back to, like, the history of the British Empire and the colonial wars and different skirmishes the British Empire had with its colonies. It's interesting that this story came out 2 years before the Iran-Contra affair in the United States. The gunrunners in the story all have Afrikaans names, like Southern, like Dutch South Africaners. And all the gunrunners, their names are those types of names, Dutch names. And they speak in that type of accent that the Dutch Africans speak in. Let's see, every character is basically, no one is good. And by the end, spoiler alert, every male character dies. The only two survivors, including the doctor, the only two survivors are the two female characters. Perry and the assistant back on Androzani Major. Also, it being Peter Davison's most outstanding performance, it's been said, like on Wikipedia, that, you know, Robert Holmes, he hadn't written a Doctor Who story since 1978, Power of Krull. And it's said that when he wrote this episode, he didn't really know how to write for the Fifth Doctor's character. So he just wrote it for Tom Baker. And they say that's why this was perhaps a much meatier role for Peter Davison to play with, because it was more fleshed out. And also why it contrasts greatly to his previous adventures as the Doctor. I don't know. It's just astounding to me how deep it really goes. The more you analyze it as an adult, it's extremely, extremely deep. Everyone is spying on everyone else. The Sirius conglomerate forces, they're led by a bumbling general who had a proficient second-in-command in Saladin, and then the gunrunners are run by a proficient leader who has a bumbling second-in-command. It makes me want to go back and watch other classic stories this many times and see what else I can dig out of other stories.
That's it. And again.
Oh. Working up an appetite. Saladin is bringing your food shortly.
Saladin? We've not met him yet. Where's he chained up?
Chains are unnecessary here, Doctor, as you will discover.
Why are you keeping us here?
Oh, my exquisite child. How could I ever let you go? The sight of beauty is so important to me. And the stimulus of a mind nearly equal to my own.
Thank you.
I've missed so much of life these last lonely years. But your arrival has changed all that. We shall become the best of companions.
What do you say, Perry? We can go on nature walks, have picnics, and jolly evenings around the campfire.
Don't mock me, Doctor. Beauty I must have, but you are dispensable. Thank you. You have the mouth of a prattling jackanapes. But your eyes, they tell a different story. It's of no matter. I shall break you to my will. And if I can't break you, I shall kill you.
Well, you, my child, shall live forever.
Nobody lives forever.
He means it will seem like forever.
That Trox is the key to eternal youth, holding at bay the ravages of time. The power of your beauty will be as permanent as a precious jewel, untarnished by the passing centuries.
Well, now we know why Spectrox is the most valuable substance in the universe.
And it's mine. All of it.
Until the army take it away from you.
The possibility does not exist. I know every move they make.
Knowing what they're doing, it's stopping them. They're two different things.
Exactly. This general is working to a plan. I've seen his operations before.
Then see mine.
It should also be noted this story finally explains the celery that the Fifth Doctor is wearing, which was, at the time, an ongoing question. What was the celery all about? If you're listening to this and you haven't seen any older Doctor Who stories, this one is very much worthy of checking out. And I think we're probably all going to be singing the same tune as far as TARDIS groans here. I'm giving it 5 TARDIS groans, 5 out of 5. It's one of my favorite stories. It really raises the bar for regeneration stories. I think it's a high point there. Peter Davison left on a high note. This is Colin Baker's first appearance as the Doctor. He's appeared in Doctor Who before, but this is and it very much immediately sets the tone for what Colin Baker's Doctor is going to be like, at least initially. And it's all good, you know. It's like I said, it's hard to come up with cons, you know, other than that dragon-like creature, you know. Perhaps, you know, obviously didn't work as well as it could have, but for the time and, you know, the day that it was shot, you know, they did the best they could with it. And as Ken said, I think Graham Harper did a great job with the lighting and the smoke and, you know, camera angles and trying to do the best he could with that. So, yeah,
it's going to be great if we get a chance to talk with him out at Gallifrey. He was supposed to be there at Gallifrey 20, mm-hmm. and that I had questions prepared for him in almost specifically about this episode, in addition to his whole career. But this one really is the thing that fans talk about over and over again.
Open your mouth. You must drink this. Is this death?
Doctor, what's happened?
Perry. See, Professor Jackage knew his stuff. Good old Jackage.
Jackage? You got the bat's milk?
Contains an antivesicant, I imagine. Interesting.
Where is it?
What?
The bat's milk.
Finished. Only enough for you.
No. There must be something I can do. Tell me.
Too late, Perry. Going soon. It's time to say goodbye.
Don't give up. You can't leave me now.
I might regenerate. I don't know.
Feels different this time.
What was it you always told me, Doctor? Braveheart? You'll survive, Doctor.
You must survive. Many of your enemies would delight in your death, Doctor.
Braveheart, you're needed. You mustn't die, Doctor.
Many of your enemies would delight in your death, Doctor.
You know
you're
that.
You're needed. Doctor. You mustn't die, Doctor.
You know that, Doctor.
Adric?
You're
needed.
You know that.
You mustn't die, Doctor.
No, my dear Doctor, you must die. Die, Doctor. Die, Doctor.
Doctor?
You're expecting someone else?
I...
That's 3 eyes in 1 breath. Makes you sound a rather egotistical young lady.
What's happened?
Change, my dear. And it seems not a moment too soon.
So, yeah, I'm giving it 5. And gentlemen, everyone else, your 5. Scrums?
5.
Yeah, it has to be. It has to be 5.
It's a 5 TARDIS grown story. Beyond that, there's a reason it was voted number 1 this time. It's always been in the top 10, always been, I think, in the top 5 fan favorites for years. Peter Davison, if I had to pick a Doctor, has always been my my favorite. You know, I have a soft spot for his era, and to see it go out on top, it's just a really nice thing. Like, he leaves on such a high note. And as James mentioned, this is probably not the perfect episode to introduce someone to Doctor Who. But once they've been hooked, this is the one that'll put the nail in deep. You know, it'll boom, like, oh, wow, this Doctor Who is great. And I know that did it for me, and this episode will continue to gain high marks. You had a choice with DWM to pick four different covers on their Mighty 200, you know, countdown issue. You had Chris Eccleston and you had David Tennant, and you had Tom Baker and you had Peter Davison, and I bought the Peter Davison one and I opened it. I bought that before I opened it and knew that Caves was number one.
No question about it.
Unfortunately, in our next episode, we'll be reviewing Twin Dilemma, where things don't hold up so well.
Oh, no.
What happened there?
Well, you know what?
Talking about extremes.
I'm going to take this as a challenge to you guys for the next episode, because it's going to be obvious that it's going to be tough. Twin Dilemma, like Caves of Androzani always being held in high esteem, Twin Dilemma is always held as the worst. Always. It was in the 1998 poll. It was in the poll recently. Let us make this challenge. Let's find something good to say about it. Yes, our reviews may be a bit negative about it, but let's challenge each other to find something good to say about it.
I don't normally consider it the worst, but it's not the most shining example of Doctor Who, but I never really consider it the worst either. But yeah, something to look forward to. Another note with Caves, I wonder if Peter Davison, you know, he must have known at the time how good this story was. And, you know, I'm sure he had some little pings of regret about leaving. You know, it was such a good story. I'm sure he wanted to stay a little bit more, you know, for more stories like this.
Yeah. But. And then he saw the script to Twin Dilemma. And he's like, good thing I'm getting out now.
All right. Well, we have yet to find anyone that if you disagree with our review of Caves and Androzani, think it's rubbish, please send us feedback. And speaking of feedback, we have some feedback to cover here. Now, before I do, Ken, did you need to leave?
I do. I need to bow out, gentlemen. So, Eric, it was great for you to join us.
Absolutely.
And thank you so much. And hopefully we'll see you and get a chance to meet you out at Gallifrey if
yes, hopefully.
You make it out there.
Sonic
and James and Lewis,
crossed.
I'll see you. Sorry.
Oh, no, I just said Sonic Screwdrivers crossed.
Okay.
Just don't cross the streams.
Indeed.
James and Lewis, we'll speak again real soon. And hopefully the next time we speak, James will be in the States with us.
Hopefully so.
All right, gentlemen. Cheers.
Cheers.
So now, speaking of feedback, we're entering the feedback portion of our show, and we always love to hear your feedback, and you can always send us your feedback. Now, this is obviously a audio podcast, and therefore audio feedback works best, but we take all kinds of feedbacks. So you can send us your feedback by calling the Doctor Who Podchalk public call box at 206-600-6517. And you can also send us your audio or text feedback at feedback@podchalk.net. Alternatively, if you have a smartphone like an iPhone or the BlackBerry, I believe, does it as well, you can record a voice memo on it and then just immediately send it as an email to feedback@podchalk.net. So very easy for you to send us feedback. You don't need any high-tech equipment to do it, you know? But to that end, we have some audio feedback that we want to cover in this episode, and we're a little backlog, and I do apologize for that. We've been apologizing with each episode, but we're catching up slowly but surely, but we are doing it. First up is, let's go back in time a little bit.
Lewis, Ken, and James, it's Philip, or Dr. Phil, in the Chicago area, calling about your discussion about the Patrick Troughton regeneration story. There was one comment about Jamie returning that I want to add a comment clarifying from the War Games. And even though I haven't seen it in a few years now, I can clearly recall the Time Lord saying to the Doctor that they, when they have their memories erased, the Doctor is that everything but their first adventure with the Doctor would be erased. That first adventure would still be retained in their memory. So that does not necessarily mean that Jamie would not remember who the Doctor is. He just wouldn't remember the rest of their history together to the war game. So, anyway, keep up the great job on the show, and all the best.
Thank you. And you are right. Yeah, I believe that is the case. Though, with that having been said, Jamie would remember his first adventure with the Doctor, but wouldn't remember Wendy Padbury's character. I just lost her name.
Zoe,
thank you. Because both of them appear in the Five Doctors together, sort of knowing, you know, so there's a little, you know, continuity error there, but yeah, definitely.
It's a very interesting canon, the Doctor Who canon. You know, it's very unique.
All right, well, moving along to our next piece of feedback, and that other one goes back to our Patrick Troughton regeneration story, The War Games, which is an epic 10-part story, which is the longest regeneration, you know, story in that respect.
Mm-hmm. About as long as the Sarah Jane season.
Yes.
My, how times have changed. Yeah.
All right, well, let's, again, going back in time, digging into our feedback bag.
Well, hello, gentlemen. My name is Rod, and I'm calling from Memphis, Tennessee, here in the States. And I just wanted to let you know that I'm a relatively new listener to the PodShock podcast, and I just want to say that you all are doing a marvelous job. Bravo. Also, I wanted to ask you a question, and my apologies if this issue has been discussed already. But in the classic Doctor Who series, it was well known in the canon that all Time Lords had a total of 12 regenerations. And now that in the current series we are approaching the 11th portrayal of Doctor Who with Matt Smith, I'm wondering, have the creators of the current series discussed what they plan to do beyond the 12th Doctor on the show? Because, of course, we're at the 11th Doctor now, which is hard to believe. And I know that this has got to be something that they must be wrestling with as far as how to deal with it. So I don't know if this has been discussed publicly, but if you could shed some light on this subject, and as well as give me your thoughts, I would appreciate it. Again, gentlemen, keep up the good work. Take care.
It's a very common question. In fact, we get it often, not just on the show, but even off the show as well. In fact, just recently this week, Ken, myself, and Billy, and many others attended a Who York event here in New York with Louise Jameson, and someone had asked me that same question. it's science fiction, so really they can do anything they want. You know, Spock died in Star Trek: The Wrath of Khan, so it's the 12th. You know, limitation of 12 regenerations is not something that is an absolute, because we know in the Five Doctors, they were prepared, the Time Lords were prepared to grant the Master another set of regenerations if they were to, you know, if he was to follow suit and go on this mission for them, you know, as a reward. So the Time Lords can actually have some sort of control on their regeneration limits. It's sort of, it doesn't seem to be biological in that sense. It seems to have some sort of artificial limit that's placed on that. So I guess, whatever reasons they have for that, but there's a definite artificial limit placed on it. And with that said, with the Time Lords of Gallifrey, quote, you know, being gone, unquote, now, who knows if that speed limit, if you like, is still in place. Could very well be that now, without any governing system on that, that he can regenerate indefinitely or until he's dead, you know, until something actually kills him that he can't regenerate. So who knows?
Who knows indeed. And as Lewis has pointed out, I mean, even with the Master, they've brought him back, and he's had more than his 13 lives, 12 regenerations, 13 lives. So I guess the deciding factor here will be whether or not the show is still popular.
Yes. I don't think that little regeneration thing is going to stop them. Yeah, highest rated show. Well, we're going to have to end because we ran out of regeneration. Sorry, folks.
Yeah, it seems to me there's a number of ways they could get through this. And yes, it's already the Master's already found a number of ways to come back to its to elude death and keep her truck in the 96 movie. And also, it'll be interesting to see, you know, spoiler alert, how he pulls it off in the end of time.
Indeed.
That will be one explanation right there. And, I mean, it always seemed to me, it does seem to be enforced, perhaps, by the Time Lords. And being that, at least for now, there's no Gallifreyan Time Lords, it seems to me the Doctor has, free reign to do as he will, at least for now.
Yeah.
Well, when is one of the Time Lords being around ever stopped the Doctor from doing what he wanted to do?
I mean, absolutely.
Unless you get the black and white guardians involved, but that's a whole other kettle.
And they, who knows, maybe they can grant another set of regenerations.
Indeed.
You know, I'm sure they'll work around this, and I'm sure maybe when the time comes, they'll even have fun playing with this in a story, you know, that they'll come up with. Who knows?
Yeah.
But I think we still have some time before that happens. Matt Smith is starting next year, and well, we're in November now, so maybe hopefully in just a few months. And we don't know how long he's going to be around. He may be around, you know, 3, 4, maybe 5 years. Who knows? You know, and then we have another Doctor coming in. But we're still not, you know, that would be the 12th.
Slow down for a second. Let's not start talking about who's going to play 12.
They've already started betting. I got my bets on this guy named James Norton.
Well, I'd be living up to David Tennant's expectations of being ginger, at least. There we go.
All right. Well, let's go into our next item in the feedback bag.
This is D. Scott, 750 Scott from Tulsa. Just want to say that all 5 episodes of season 3 of Torchwood, excellent. Plus, how they left off for a possible meeting with the new Doctor was equally super and fantastic. Kind of disheartening to find out now that 3 out of the 5 crew members are now dead, but I think I have a way around even that. We should all write in for a season 4, and season 4 could be the surrounding the whole notion is, are Yanto and Toshiko doubles? Because we know Owen could have escaped the nuclear deal, but there we go. There's a possible season 4 plotline that Gray replaced and Yanto with doubles. D. Scott 750 saying ciao for now.
Well, and a very similar type of feedback there, dealing with death and obviously John Barrowman's character, Captain Jack, constantly regenerates himself. He keeps on coming back to life, not in a sense a regeneration of his continuing self. But as far as these characters go, I think Torchwood has set their tone at the very beginning that it's a dangerous position to be, you know, in Torchwood. So, and I think it adds a little danger and you know, to the characters and the storylines, knowing that, you know, these characters can go. You don't have to be wearing a red shirt, you know. no offense, James, I know you were wearing one for Halloween, but you don't have to be wearing a red shirt to go. You could be a main character, and actually you don't know if they're going to survive this particular story. It adds some excitement, and it puts you on the edge of the seat even more so in Torchwood, knowing that. So, you know, and I say, you know, they can, you know, if you have to have these characters back for even just for one episode, they can do a flashback or a prequel. But even that, I doubt they'll do, because it takes, you know, the thing with prequels is that, you know, the characters are going to survive because you know their future. So I don't think they're going to go that direction. And I think we'll just add to the cast, different casting, different mixtures, and keep it exciting.
Yes,
Who knows? Maybe Yanto's just a Time Lord. That would please the Torchwood fanboys and girls.
Oh, my goodness.
All right. Well, time will tell. We'll see what series four brings. They can actually, the way series three ended, they can go anywhere they like. John Barrowman said that he wants to continue playing the part, but that doesn't mean it's going to be Torchwood, or it doesn't mean it's he could be playing Captain Jack in anything. You know, as long as it's not Come Dancing with Captain Jack, we'll be okay.
Might well be at this rate.
Yes.
Who can say?
And speaking of the future of Torchwood, I would be remiss if I didn't mention Nat on the Bridging the Rift podcast. Back when they did their episode, I believe, on fan fiction or something like that, mm-hmm. He had so many great ideas that he just came up on his own of where they could go with Torchwood in the future. So many great ideas. They're actually great ideas. I know that fan fiction gets a bad name, but he has some really great ideas. Mm-hmm. And if anyone's interested in that, you should check out the Bridging the Rift podcast. It's fantastic.
Cool. I know Nat is very creative and very talented. I've seen his artwork, and so it's not surprising that he's very imaginative. Imaginative.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, check it out. And the way series three ends is very open-ended, so it really leaves it open to go anywhere, anytime, any place. And we can only wait and see what happens.
Absolutely.
All right, let's we got a couple more feedbacks to do, and here's one of them.
Hey guys, this is Brent from Raleigh, North Carolina. Just wanted to let you know, in case I haven't heard anybody say it on here yet, but I just found out this weekend that there's a TV station called G4 that's going to be covering the San Diego Comic-Con. They didn't mention anything about Doctor Who, or I don't know how much of it they're going to cover, but I know they're going to cover a pretty big portion of it. So it's on G4. All right, thanks. See you.
All right. Obviously, that's a bit dated.
Wow.
G4 is a, unfortunately, is a, well, I say unfortunate because there's a history to that, which I'm not going to get into, but it's a video game channel, more or less, and they did cover Comic-Con, but they didn't cover the Doctor Who aspect of Comic-Con. They basically did some coverage on the floor. They had a Star Wars panel coverage that they did, and it was limited to that. And there, if you want to get coverage of, we covered a bit about it. We had some correspondence there ourselves. And if you can find some clips on YouTube as well from the Doctor Who panels discussions there. But G4 didn't really cover the Doctor Who, anything related to Doctor Who they didn't cover. And our last piece of feedback is this one from a friend of ours of the show, Dr. Upachak, Darth Skeptical.
Hey guys, Darth Skeptical here with a little comment about an assertion you made in your Power of the Daleks review and then reiterated in your War Games review. Jamie's memories of the Doctor were not, in fact, totally erased. Instead, he remembers just the events of the Highlanders. This massively complicates any attempt to bring him back into the new series. Why? Well, if Moffat strictly observes the War Games, then what you'd end up with is the 11th Doctor meeting a substantially older Jamie, who would likely have only dim memories of meeting a guy called the Doctor in his youth. How then would the Doctor explain his change in appearance? How, that is, without bogging the script down with a ton of exposition. Bringing back Jamie backs Moffat into a terrible corner, where he'll feel an obligation both to hardcore fans who know about the War Games and the overwhelming bulk of the audience who don't. And then you've got the question of trying to explain his adventure with the Sixth Doctor. No, as much as I'd like to see Jamie back, it's really not worth it in terms of the narrative burden. About the only solution I can think of comes from an Eighth Doctor comic strip called Where Nobody Knows Your Name. There, the Eighth Doctor encounters Frobisher, Frobisher being a comic strip companion of the Sixth and Seventh Doctors, who is in a human form the Doctor fails to recognize. Thus, both the Eighth Doctor and Frobisher don't know each other. Maybe a riff on this idea could work, where the 11th Doctor recognizes Jamie, but doesn't even try to explain who he is. But then, of course, the question becomes, why bring Jamie back at all? Jamie's just a trap, guys. Ian, Stephen, or Susan are your more likely 60s returnees. Still, Moffat proved entirely creative in bringing back the 5th Doctor, so I wouldn't completely discount the possibility
that he may yet have a Jamie-sized rabbit to pull out of his hat.
Okay, and we lost James in that call.
Interesting.
All right, well, we're going to try to get James back on, but in the meantime, just to cover a little bit what Darth was saying here, and as far as the memory erasure goes, we're not sure how well it works, because didn't the same thing happen with Donna Noble? And we may see her remembering some stuff too. We don't know how well this actually works. Who knows? I mean, there's always, it's science fiction. There's always ways to get around it. But I think what Darth's main point was that it's complicated.
Again, the Doctor Who canon is very wibbly wobbly.
Trying to get James back on board with us.
I didn't even know he dropped.
Yeah.
Yep, I dropped. Bloody Skype.
Yeah, sorry about that, James. It was towards the end of Darth's call, and so his main point was he was saying that Frobisher from the comic book series could actually somehow...
Make a return, yeah.
But I was saying that it was, you know, with Doctor Who and this whole memory erasure thing, we don't know how well it works, and who knows, maybe without the Time Lords being around, maybe his memory starts seeping back in. Who knows, there's ways around it. But I think Darth's main point is that it gets a little complicated to explain, but I still say never say never.
Never say never.
All right, well...
Which isn't even really a canon 007.
Yes. All right, well, that's, I think it's going to wrap it up for this episode of Doctor Who Podshock. Ken had to bow out before feedback, so we thank him, and he sent, you know, on his behalf, he sends his regards, I'm sure. And we want to thank Eric for being on board with us.
Yes, thanks, mate.
My pleasure. Bring along. Yes, indeed.
And Eric, how can people find you? I know you're on Twitter, and you're a co-host with Kat on the Sci-Fi Party Line. So let our listeners know how people can find you on both
of
those.
Yes, I am at Bullet33 on Twitter, also Bullet33 in the Podshock forums. And you can check out our podcast, which Lewis will be on the forthcoming episode. I believe will be number 39.
It was a fun show to be on. Thank you once again.
Yes, and you can find that when it posts. It will be at scifipartyline.com.
Very good. And if not, just go to iTunes. I'm sure if you do a search for a Sci-Fi Party Line, you'll find it. He does the show with Kat, who's an incredible... you can find her, I think, as a Fancy Fembot on Twitter.
That's correct. And hopefully she may be a guest on your show.
Yes, I invited her to be on our show. So maybe for Parting of the Ways, or I know she's... when I was on her show, she expressed herself very well as far as the regeneration from Christopher Eccleston going to Matt Smith, and speaking of going, you know, from... going into that, what did I just say? Did I just say that? I'm sorry. I'm thinking ahead of myself, because I meant from Christopher Eccleston to David Tennant, and then looking forward to David Tennant's going into Matt Smith. And that's, I'm sorry, it's a long podcast. So
indeed.
I do apologize. Well, let's continue the Twitter roll call. You can follow James on Twitter at twitter.com/JamesNorton. Ken, you can follow on Twitter at twitter.com/KenDeep. And myself, you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/LewisTrapani. And for all your Doctor Who news, follow Doctor Who Podshock on Twitter at twitter.com/Podshock. Well, thank you all for listening, and thank you, James, as well, and Eric once again, and Ken. It's been a fantastic show. Come back next time.
See ya.
Cheers.
Adios. I
want to be here.
You have been listening to Doctor Who Podshock, presented by the fan-run GallifreyanEmbassy.org. Doctor Who is owned and trademarked by the BBC. Doctor Who Podshock is not affiliated with the BBC in any way. Come back next time for another exciting and informative episode of Doctor Who Podshock. You can email us at feedback@podshock.net. Doctor Who Podshock theme music by Jeff Smith at thejeffsmith.com. This has been a production of Art Trap Productions brought to you by the Gallifreyan Embassy and has been made possible by supporting subscribers and donations from listeners like you.
No, my dear doctor, you must die. Die, doctor.